Many in this room are not familiar with a musician by the name of Mac Davis, but a long time ago, Mac Davis wrote a song that asked a simple question and kind of gave a pretty simple solution. It said, "Hey, mister, where are you going in such a hurry? Have you spent some time with your family? There's a whole lot more to life than work and worry. Some of the greatest things in life are free, and they're right before your eyes. But you need to stop and smell the roses. You need to count your many blessings every day, because you're going to find the way to heaven is a rough and rocky road if you don't stop and smell the roses along the way." If you've never heard that song, it's really not important that you do, because David tells us exactly the same thing millennia before Mac Davis ever walked the earth. David is much more simple and much more to the point, but David recognized that we are always in a hurry. He realized that our list to do each day is unrealistically long, and he realized that we often use our day off as simply time to catch up on work that we've put off. We refuse to slow down because when we do, we feel like we're being slothful in a lot of cases. But David, when he wrote the 23rd Psalm, in verse 2, he really encapsulized the whole stop and smell the roses mindset. In Psalm 23, verse 2, David reminds us that he, being God the Father, makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. Today we want to have a conversation about the importance of rest in our life, the importance of what has long been called a Sabbath rest, if you will. And it's this moment of lying down in green pastures and being still by the quiet waters of refreshment. There is bad theology that floats out around there concerning this particular passage, because it says that he makes me lie down in green pastures. And the way people have perverted this passage is they're saying, all right, you're too busy for God. Well, he'll cause some kind of calamity in your life. He will break you down in some way to make you stop. He will put you on his back in a hospital bed looking up at the ceiling so you have to pay attention to him. I want you to know that is not, again, not what David's saying here. What David is saying here is that the Lord has done everything possible for you to have access to green pastures. He's done everything possible to take you to the quiet waters. And so what we need to do today is we need to look at how this came about. It's interesting when David writes this from the vantage point of not a shepherd himself, but of a sheep, and he understands what is required for sheep to be at rest in green pastures and to be content in quiet waters. He understood that green pastures don't happen by chance. Green pastures happen as a result of intentionality of the shepherd. You see, David, when he was serving as king, he did so in Palestine. And he did so in a place where it was hot and dry and arid. And green pastures were there, but green pastures didn't typically just happen. They were a result of clearing rough, rocky, hard land. It was a result of the shepherd tearing out brush and pulling up roots without the help of stump grinders. It was the hard pan soil plowing. It was careful preparation. It was the planting of the grass and the weeding of the grass. It was the process of irrigation and getting water, an abundance of water, to the place so that these pastures could flourish and be green. When David says, he makes me lie down in green pastures, what he's reminding us is that God has done all of the groundwork, all of the prep work, all of the hard work to make sure there are places of rest in our life. I told you when I first started preaching this series on 23rd Psalm, a lot of the information I was getting was coming from Philip Keller's book about a shepherd looks at Psalm 23. And one of the things that he tells us in the book is that for sheep to be content to the place where they can lay down in green pastures and to just completely veg out, so to speak, they need four things. First, they need freedom from fear. They need freedom from friction within the flock. They need freedom from flies and parasites. Most animals can reach up and scratch themselves or preen themselves with their paw. Sheep can't. Hoofed animals typically can't do those kinds of things. They also need freedom from hunger. And he says when these four criteria are met, a sheep can chill out with the best of them. They just plop down in the grass, their little legs sticking up, happy as can possibly be. But if any one of these criteria aren't met, they can't. Sheep are agitated by nature. And you and I are asked to give God our very best. And in order to give God our very best, we can't do that if rest and regular rest is not a part of our spiritual discipline. We talk all the time about praying and reading the Bible and meditating on the scripture and service and those kind of things. We don't talk a lot about participating in Sabbath rest. It's an important piece of your spiritual journey. And if we're going to give God our best, we have to find places and ways to rest. But we don't, and we make excuses. Well, you don't understand. I have small children. I do understand. I had small children once. And I remember the harried pace of life. Some of that was because small children are just demanding. Some of that was because we overextended and we overexpected from our children. Some of it we could have corrected if we would have simply made different and better choices. Some of us say, well, you don't understand. I have a demanding boss. I do understand that sometimes you have a demanding boss, and sometimes it's easier just to do whatever the boss tells you and not rest. And instead of when you do have opportunities to take time off, you fill it with all of the other things that you think are crucial and important. Now, I understand there are seasons where things have to get done, but we need to be conscientious enough that we don't make excuses for why we don't rest. Some people will say, well, I just live in the big city. It's fast-paced. It's a city that never sleeps. It just goes all the time, and if it's going to go, I have to go too. And we don't rest. Sometimes we don't rest because we're overextended. And all of these are the excuses and the rationales that we make, but I want to submit to you this morning that there are deeper, more spiritual reasons why we choose not to rest. I want to talk about four of them. One of the reasons we choose not to rest, we choose not to Sabbath rest, is because it's hard to rest when I don't know my true worth. We've talked about this before. I've shared this with you over and over and over again over the last 4 or 5 years. The problem is that we don't love God enough. The problem is that we do not realize how much God genuinely, deeply loves us. And until we begin to figure that out, the benefits of lying down in green pastures and being refreshed by the quiet waters just can't come because it doesn't exist in our life. We're always trying to work to earn God's grace, or work to earn God's pleasure, or work to earn God's satisfaction, or work to earn His love, or work to earn His attention to us. And we waste our time trying to do these things. We have a terribly misplaced identity. I don't know if you remember my friend RJ when he came 5 or 6 years ago. RJ spent the entire weekend talking to us about this one truth, and that is your identity is not determined by your proficiency in Christ, but by your proximity to Him. We in the West have missed that. We think if I work more, if I do more, if I participate more in the church's activities, if I give of myself and of my time, and if I just do enough religious things, then I must be close to Jesus. And the Scripture never teaches that at all. There's a story in the New Testament about Mary and Martha, and Martha was working tirelessly to make sure that Jesus, the host, and the other guests were well tended and well taken care of, to the point where Martha was exasperated. And she's like, make Mary help me, Jesus. Because Mary's just sitting there listening to Jesus teach. And Jesus says, oh, Martha, you worried about a bunch of stuff. But Mary has chosen the greater thing. Mary chose proximity to Jesus instead of proficiency in activities. When we live this way, we create for ourselves what Jesus calls a hell. Even worse than that is when we live this way and we expect others to live this way, He says we create for them a double hell. Matthew 23:15, woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites! You travel across the sea and you make a single proselyte. And when that person becomes a proselyte, you make him twice as much a child of hell as yourself. What Jesus is saying is that you people live your life to practice rules and regulations and spiritual activity. And what you don't understand is that it's not about rules and regulations and spiritual activity. It is about being close to Jesus. It is about being attached to the vine. It is about being connected to God the Father through Christ the Son. And when you go and convert somebody and then you try to force all these rules and regulations and religious activities on them, not only are you creating hell for yourself, but you have now created a double hell for them because you can't keep that up. You cannot earn your way into God's good grace. God says, I have loved you with an everlasting love. And until you begin to realize that you are loved by God, there's very little the 23rd Psalm can do to help you enjoy the green pastures and the quiet waters. Because outside of the love of God, there never really is anything like rest. It just can't happen. We read in the Gospel of John, yet all who receive him, to those who believed in his name, he gave them the right to become children of God. I told you the story last week about a woman that had a blood disorder. And she had only gotten worse over a 12-year period, and she'd spent all her money on bogus doctors that had tried to make her feel better. And she couldn't come to a place where she felt better. And she reached out and she grabbed a hold of Jesus' robe, and in her desperate and deep faith, she was healed. And Jesus called her out and he looked at her. And when they engaged each other in conversation, he didn't say, hey, woman, why'd you touch me like that? He said, daughter, your faith has made you well. What Jesus was saying is that you are part of my family now because your faith has made you a part of my family. I don't know how many times I have to say it, and I don't know with what desperation in my voice I have to say it to help you people who are under my watch care understand you are loved by God, and the call on your life is to live in and live out that love. I'll keep saying it till we all together can start believing it. It's hard to rest. It's hard to find green pasture. It's hard to find quiet water when you don't know and understand the worth of who you are. Ken Sims' favorite verse is Zephaniah 3, verse 17. The prophet Zephaniah writes these words, the Lord your God is in your midst. He's with you. A mighty one who will save you. What a great promise. He will rejoice over you with gladness. You. That's personal. That's intimate. That's you. He will quiet you with his love because he's done all the preparation for the green pastures. He will exalt over you with loud singing. You bring a song to the heart of God. Maybe a good thing for you to do this week is to memorize Zephaniah chapter 3, verse 17 and take it with you everywhere you go. Because you'll never truly understand what it is to rest in green pastures until you know your true worth and until you appreciate the preparation that has gone in to make sure there are pastures and there are quiet water moments in your life. It's hard to rest when I don't know my true worth, but it's also hard to rest when more better things are a priority. It's hard to rest when more better things are a priority. We're greedy. I got a lot of sin issues in my life. I've never been shy about that with you, but my sin of choice is covetousness. I want stuff. I want to enjoy things. And it's a battle that I fight against not often enough. And don't misunderstand me. Wanting is not intrinsically bad. Wanting nice things is not intrinsically bad. Never being satisfied is intrinsically bad. It's very popular now for people to take on a side hustle. And I'm not opposed to side hustles. Side hustles come in handy, especially when they're necessary. But when you have to take a side hustle because a $60 pair of tennis shoes isn't enough, you'd rather have a $250 pair of tennis shoes. It's going to be hard to find green pastures. When you work yourself to death in your regular job but in your side hustle job because a used car is simply out of the question, you have to keep up with the Joneses and the Smiths and everybody else and have a new car because your image is at stake. When you have to take a side hustle because your $80 purse doesn't bring you the right kind of status, you need the $300 purse. You can't find green pastures and quiet waters if you're constantly breaking your backside so that you can have more better stuff to impress other people because you're just not satisfied with the stuff that you already got. Solomon, when he writes Proverbs in Proverbs chapter 23, he says, "Do not wear yourself out to get rich. Have the wisdom to show restraint. Cast but a glance at riches, and they are gone. For they will surely sprout wings and fly off to the sky like an eagle." We look at our stuff and we try to determine our wealth. We look at our stuff and we try to determine our place in society. We look at our stuff and try to determine our place on the street. Jesus asks us to beware, to guard against every kind of greed. Life is not measured by how much you own. We have a finance committee, and the finance committee meets month to month, and they look at the budget, and they see that the budget is being beat down week in and week out. Not only are we not taking in what we need, but because of the way things are set up, we're spending more than we're taking in, and they're trying to hold that back, and they're trying to restrain costs and spending and things like that. And we're quick to say, well, it's a budgetary problem, and it's not. It's a heart problem. It's a heart problem because the people of the church, not just this church, but churches in general, refuse to tithe. And they say, well, all preachers talk about is money. Preachers are greedy. Really? Well, you just confess that you have a coveting problem. Well, that's true. But people won't tithe to the church because you'd rather spend your dollars on stuff you love, not stuff you need. People won't tithe to the church because they're not even willing to prioritize spending. I'm going to spend everything on myself. People aren't willing to prioritize the church because they're working so hard just to catch up that they can't even keep up, let alone be generous. And it's killing people. When Solomon writes Ecclesiastes in chapter 4, he said, "Then I observed that most people are motivated to success because they envy their neighbors, but this too is meaningless." This is a chasing of the wind. It's impossible to lie down in green pastures if you're always pursuing more and better because you're never satisfied with what God has already provided for you. I'm going to talk about this in a little more depth here in a minute. It's hard to rest when you don't know your true worth and when you put your worth in stuff, and it's hard to rest when things are a priority, but it's also hard to rest when relationships are inconvenient. When relationships are inconvenient, it's hard for you to get a good night's sleep. Because you are created by God to love. You're created by God to love. This is a prayer I pray a lot. Sometimes I pray a lot more than others. Lord, help me love. Help me love. Solomon says, "I've observed another example under something meaningless under the sun." This is the case of a man who is all alone, without a child, without a brother, yet who works hard to gain as much wealth as he can. But then he asks himself, "Who am I working for? Why am I giving up so much pleasure now? It is all so meaningless and depressing." The implication of the passage is that the pleasure comes from relationships, not from stuff. Why am I working so hard now and giving up the pleasures of life? Look, there's an interesting thing about being a human being. Being a human being means you are the most delightful and the most annoying part of other people's lives. It's just the way it is. The greatest delights in your life, I can almost guarantee you, have come because of a relationship with somebody else. The counter is also true. The most annoying things in your life have come as a result of a relationship from somebody else in your life. When Jesus was being tested by a lawyer in the temple square, he said, "Hey, you've been talking a lot about this kind of stuff. I need you to be able to tell us verbatim what the greatest commandment is." Jesus never missed a beat. He said, "The greatest commandment is to love God and to love your neighbor as yourself." See, there's the self component of that again. You have to know what your worth is, because unless you know what your worth is, you can't offer that same worth to somebody else, and you certainly can't offer that kind of love back to God. Someday we're going to stand before God in what's called the judgment seat. And we're basically going to be put on trial. And our life is going to be examined. We're going to be responsible for the deeds we did and the things we thought and the relationships that we had and the way we handled those relationships. But when you get to heaven, or when you get to, not necessarily heaven, but when you get to this judgment section of eternity, God's not going to look at you and say, "So, tell me about the goals that you reached." He's not going to say to you, Tell me about the stuff that you acquired. He's not going to ask you about the promotions that you received. When we stand before God and have to have an account for our life, He's going to want to know about our relationships. He's going to say, "Did you get to know me because you got to know my son?" He's going to want to know, "Did you love me with all of your heart and soul and mind and strength? Did you help others find me with all of your heart and soul and mind and strength? Did you love your wife like Christ loved the church? Did you know your neighbor's name so that they could count on you and so that you could help them in time of need? Did you offer them not only a cool cup of water, but a warm and friendly smile? Did you continue to love your child even though they became a prodigal? Did you show love to your husband by offering him your respect? How did you love those who are different from you? How did you love those who disagree with you? How did you love those who were your enemies?" You see, these are the hard questions of lying down in green pastures. These are the hard questions of lying down in quiet waters. When I was 18 years old, I really felt a strong call to be in religious work. I don't think I'd been called to the ministry at that point because I hadn't accepted Christ at that point, and I didn't think you could really be called to serve Christ if you hadn't accepted Christ then. And so, but I was 18 years old, we were on a mission trip. While we were on our mission trip, the other youth in the youth group were really, really getting under my skin. Because I was holy and I was religious and I did all of the right things that the adults of my religion expected me to do, and the other kids didn't. And so I went up to the very front seat on the bus where Brother Luther was. He was our worship pastor at the time. And I sat down next to him and I said, "Brother Luther, I need you to give me some advice." He said, "What's that?" I said, "You know that I've been wanting to get into the ministry," he said, "but right now people, I'm just sick and tired of people. People that won't do the right thing, people that won't follow the rules, people that won't live according to what we've been instructing them to live. And I'm sick of people." And Brother Luther, we were on a bus, and Brother Luther scooted up to the end of his seat, and he turned sideways kind of to face me, and he put his hand on my leg, and he said, "Kevin, if that's how you feel, don't get into ministry." Well, that wasn't what I was hoping to hear. He was supposed to be mad at all the people that weren't following the rules like I was. And I told him as much. I said, "Well, I wasn't expecting to hear that." And that's when he began to teach me the lesson that people are your greatest delight and your biggest disappointment. And it has been true in my whole life. I cannot find rest in green pastures and quiet waters when I am perplexed and annoyed with people. People are inconvenient. Relationships are hard. But we've been called to love. Some of you remember my friend Chad Carger. Chad Carger was talking to our deacons about discipleship and being a disciple. And Chad said this: "The depth of your discipleship is measured by your increased capacity to love." Discipleship is not predicated on how much knowledge you have. Discipleship is predicated on your increased ability to love those that are around you. Oh, and I've never been one to tell you a story or to lie to you. It's hard work. It's hard work. But it's the expectation. Solomon writes in Ecclesiastes, "Two people are better off than one, and they can help each other succeed. If one person falls, the other can reach out and help. But someone who falls alone is in real trouble. Likewise, two people lying close together can keep each other warm. But how can one keep warm alone? A person standing alone can be attacked and be defeated, but two can stand back to back and conquer. Three are even better. For a triple braided cord is not easily broken." That's a passage on relationships. We used it yesterday at a wedding. And it certainly applies in the home, but more importantly, it applies to humanity. God didn't put us on earth to accomplish goals or to make money or to own dope things or to go to hip places. He put us on earth to learn to love. And if we can't learn to love if we can't learn the joy of deep relationships, even in the midst of disappointment and conflict, we can't find the green pasture. We cannot enjoy the quiet water. It's hard. It's hard to rest when relationships are inconvenient. And lastly, I touched on this earlier, it's hard to rest when I just won't be satisfied. It's hard to rest when I just won't be satisfied. Always looking for more, always looking for better, always looking for new, always looking for different. Not only in our personal life, not only in the way that we acquire things and we measure our worth in culture, but even spiritually. There is such a huge movement now of people looking for new revelation. Come on, I need to go to a pastor who's going to teach me whiz-bang new things. And this has sufficed for 2,000 years. The problem is not that there's nothing new. The problem is that we've just never decided to learn how to practice the old. Lynette Palmer said one time, and it's seared in my brain, we as a nation have a prosperity problem. And the problem with our prosperity is it typically keeps us unsatisfied. We're distracted from the things that matter. It's hard to be led by the quiet waters. It's hard to lie down in green pastures if you simply don't want to be satisfied. Because the water's never cool enough or quiet enough, and the green pasture is never green enough or sustaining enough. The shepherd has done the work to provide for you the green pasture. The shepherd is constantly in the process of leading us to the quiet waters. Jesus said, I am the good shepherd, and I will do everything I can possibly do, including laying down my life for you. He says, come to me, all of you who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. He wants us to experience the green pastures of rest and the quiet waters of refreshment. But you have to want to be satisfied by the things that He has provided. I'm calling you to be satisfied today by the things that He has provided. He's done it for you. Would you decide to be satisfied in the Lord?